All right, Alex, Duratus podcast. You've probably no idea what this is. I joke about it most weeks. We've got about six or seven listeners. It's creeping up, hoping for double figures after this one, mate. So thank you for coming on board, Alex Waller.
No, mate, it's an honour. I'm probably one of those six or seven, mate.
That's all right. Well, that's good then. That's good. So if you could tell your mum, and then we might push those double figures. Yeah, exactly. So so for those that know about you, those that don't, I've been introduced to Alex a few weeks ago, really, through a mutual friend, former colleague, a friend of mine, whose relationships, friendships with you, and you know, said that, you know, I'm fascinated, as we've spoken about before, I'm fascinated with why some people have got the success in their chosen field and why some people haven't. And the people that haven't probably couldn't pick that, but I'm more interested in speaking to the people that have. You know, as a professional rugby player, you're the top of your game, Heineken Cup winner, Premiership, nearly 300 appearances in the Premiership. There's not many people kind of pushing those numbers for various reasons. And I know, generally speaking, amongst yourselves, that there's decent levels of humility, not always, but there is decent levels of humility. And you probably would go, you know, this is, but I can look at it and go, that's impressive stats. So do you mind, just for the listeners, again, there's going to be a mix of people follow you through the sport, and then there's going to be some people that don't know about you, just having a quick sort of expose, a little canter through your sort of career and why rugby, really? Why rugby, Alex?
Why rugby? Yeah, that's a good question, mate. So I was real late to the game. I didn't start playing until I was 14, which it sounds young, but you know, most of the lads I played with start 4, 5, 6 playing junior rugby, mini rugby, and no one in my family had ever played before. I just changed schools and you had to play it, so I was like, fine, I'll give this a crack. Long story short, really enjoyed it. Got picked up by Northampton at 15. Then got binned off by Northampton at 16. Broke my leg. I wasn't really taking it seriously then. Yeah. I was playing it for a bit of crack. I was planning to join, or I wanted to join the forces. And then got picked up again by Northampton at 18. I thought, I'll give this a crack. This could be quite a good living. A good career path. I enjoy rugby. I enjoy the camaraderie and the team atmosphere.
Yep.
And then got binned off by Northampton again.
there's a common thread already.
Yeah.
Let's see where this good. Goes.
So I had a year out, mate. So obviously, with the way school works and academies, you sort of come out of school at 18, sign a contract, then you're in the academy. That's the pathway such. And, that wasn't really my way into it, and that's not the only way into it, but that's the way most people go straight from school. And I had a year out just training by myself. I was very fortunate. Mum and dad were separated, but they said, you know, you can have a year, have a crack at it if you want, we'll support you. So did that. I went and played men's rugby because I'd changed position to the one I am now. Went and played men's rugby for a year in National League, I don't know, 3 or 4, it's right down there. One man and his dog watching, but just playing men's rugby.
Proper rugby, some would say. Yeah, some would say proper rugby.
Playing on a cow field, that's what it's like. Getting filled in every week, just learning the dark arts. And then I think I annoyed my way into a contract. I just texted the academy coach every week.
Whatever works.
And just pestered him. This is what I'm doing. I'm playing well here. These are my clips, this, that, and the other clip. Just what? And I think he just gave me a contract to shut me up in the end. So he offered me a one-year deal. And then I was like, that's sweet, foot's in the door, and then just got to work. And then I think so I signed at 19, and then that year I signed probably 3 or 4 contracts because there's like, oh, you can have another year. Oh, okay, we'll just do this and we'll keep him for a little bit longer than this, that, and the other. And then, you know, 10 years later, I'm still here. It's been it's not been a smooth ride by any stretch, but it's been, enjoyable.
Again, that decision, I was chatting to somebody the other day who fell into a military career and did really well out of it. And, you know, you've kind of described a bit of a story there, how there wasn't this goal setting idea of that, you know, watching maybe, I don't know, whoever your team are on the TV as a young lad and sort of saying, that's the person I want to be. You know, some people have that journey as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what was it about rugby that kind of appealed to you? And was it just fun to begin with? But at what point did it start to really get serious for you?
Yeah, it was fun. And that was literally it. We had it was a good group of lads at school. All my mates played, really enjoyed it. I thought, this is good crack, and we can, you know, play games and then go a few beers afterwards. And just, you know, that was literally it. But, and then Saints picked me up the second time, and there was talk of this contract and this, that, and the other. And you start seeing the boys because you're training with the senior squad a little bit, and you're like, I could do this for a living. This is all right. This is, you know, this is better than working in an office for sure. Yeah. And I was like,
no doubt.
I was like, okay, well, I'll try and give this a crack. Probably 17, probably a bit too late to the party. I was like, right, I'll knuckle down. And it wasn't, and, you know, decisions had already been made by then in terms of contracts and stuff. So then I thought, and then obviously, like I said, they said you can have a crack 1 year, to give it a crack. So I just knuckled down. I was like, right, I'll commit to this, put all my eggs in that basket. I'm not really the most academic, so uni wasn't really an option for me. Yeah. I didn't really want to do uni. It didn't really appeal to me too much. And so I thought, right, I'll knuckle down on this, give it everything, and then if it doesn't, then I'll do something else. So we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But it's a famous, you know, when you go through school, everyone's like, have a plan B, and the other. And at that time, I was like, nah, just eggs.
You roll in.
Let's just go for it.
So, and there's times that works, you know, when there's literally no option. It's like the free climbers that go up, you know, they've got to go. They've got to keep going, right? And there's no option to turn back. And there's something to be said for that. Now, that year where it was make or break, shall we say, were you very conscious of that? And were you genuinely hyper-focused? Or were you still kind of one foot in, one foot out?
No, I literally jumped in double-footed in there.
Yeah, nice one.
It was miserable. Like for a day for me would be, you know, I'd get up, I was driving, so I've got a younger brother who continually plays professionally as well now at Worcester, but I'd take him to school, then I'd go to the gym, do a weight session, I'd have lunch at the gym, do a swim, then I'd go and pick my brother up, take him to the gym because he was fat then, do a cardio session and something else, then come back, eat my dinner, and then I'd probably go off to training in the evening. This amateur rugby club that I was playing for, and you get a bit of boot money or beer money here and there, which is time over and getting my petrol money. Yeah. I was fully in. All my mates were at gap years, you know, going around Thailand and India having the time of their lives, partying, which actually probably helped because it was just me and Northampton on my own. I was like,
same thing, really.
Yeah.
Like Thailand, gap years, Northampton. Yeah. Same thing, really. I've never been, but I'm sure it's the same.
Yeah. Oh, it's lovely. Yeah. Tropical.
Yeah. So now that's all good. So that year then, when you made it pro then, and when did you feel like you had your feet under the door, so to speak, and you were confident that there was a place for you in the squad and you could kind of relax into that and say, right, I'm a professional rugby player now and this is it?
Probably
do you,
so year
do you
one,
feel like that yet, by the way?
We'll probably touch on that in a bit, but not really. No, I'm very much, I know I am, but I very much work like I shouldn't be here because that's, you know, I'm not the most skillful player by any stretch, but I will just work for anyone and I'll just work hard and knuckle down. I've made a career out of just not being very skillful, but just working hard. And I think that's probably 90% shortfall from some people who want to get into this.
We'll go there straight away if you don't mind, Alex. So you kind of hard work has been your catalyst for your success. I mean, and how true a statement would you say that is?
Oh, definitely, mate. I'm not the most skillful bloke. I'm not going to be drop goaling or kicking 60-meter kicks. But what I'll do, I'll put my head in a dark place and I'll hit someone if they run at me. That's pretty much been my career, and I've made a living out of it, which has been all
growing
right.
Growing up, I was a big fan of Neil Back. And again, I read his biography. It might have been his autobiography. I'm not sure if he wrote it himself, actually. But there's a line in it. I still remember it now. It was talking about he was prepared to put his head where someone else wouldn't put their foot. And that's, for me, significant in the sense of how committed he was to the game. Now, I've played a little bit of rugby. I've never sort of competed at a certain level, inter-club kind of stuff. It fascinates me in the sense that you're a group, a team of people. So again, I connect with that on every level. Mm-hmm. A proper team, a team in the sense of it's the different, you know, again, I had this description explained to me recently, the difference between a group and a team. Group of people is great and can do lots of great things. Team of people rely on each other. And as a team of people, you know, there is that camaraderie more often than not, hopefully, in a good team. And that's powerful. So I relate to that. But then also you're in a sport where, whilst on the face of it, it might not be similar. I absolutely view it as similar because you're prepared to put your body on the line for an organization, for a team of people, whatever your motivations are, for this something, this championship, for this success. Yeah. And that may just be the camaraderie. I think there's a lot of similarities there. And that's, so what is it for you that is that's the draw there? What's the pull?
Is that team, mate? That team's massive. You know, you spend more time, and I'm sure, you know, you're very aware of this with your past role. You spend more time with these people than you do with your family. You know, and that doesn't take away from the, you enjoy your family, but, you know, I'm with these boys 7 days a week and most of the day. And you build a relationship and a friendship and you've got that one common goal. It's difficult now, having come to the point in my career where I'm a leader and the captain of the club, where to manage the whole squad, because realistically everyone wants to start or play at the weekend, and there's a squad of 50 and there's only 23 spots. So it's about trying to get that culture where everyone's pulling in the same direction, regardless of, you know, being disappointed, you know. So my three or four competitors for my position, we've all got a really good relationship and we help each other, and that's what we've got to try and build throughout the squad, which is...
I interviewed them a couple of days ago. That's not what they said, but that's interesting.
Yeah, I bet, yeah.
No, mate, I'm joking, obviously. But how long's that been the case for you now?
This is my second year as captain. Last year, I did it with Dylan, who we both, obviously, you've met, and this year with... Tamala Harrison, who's a young back row. So me and him share that responsibility. But it's a real interesting role, and one that I'm really enjoying. It's interesting. She had a stinker last year, which is what sort of led me down this path of trying to figure stuff out and focus more on the psychological and mental aspects of the game. But I just took too much on. My basket was way too far. I was getting married. Yep. I had a little one. Captain, my form dropped a little bit, so then I'm chasing my form because I'm not starting every week, and I'm trying to be captain at the same time where I'm not even starting, so I can't leave. It's just like this. It was this horrible mess.
I talk about this to people, but I've never really covered it too much on a pod or anything, and I'm definitely going to do some like a piece on it at some point around the incident pit. Now this is something that we in my old world used to speak about all the time, how the incident pit's this pit of the slowly kind of turning slopes that as you get darker and darker, deeper, it's more and more difficult to get out of it, right? And so these events, there's the you know, people, and this is part of why I'm kind of trying to understand, again, reflectively on my career and my kind of experiences, why I didn't break down, why I didn't kind of have issues transitioning necessarily, because I think it's all to do with this, in my words, incident pit, in the sense of I manage things and try and cut things off early when things are going wrong. Now, I don't always do that consciously. Sometimes it's subconsciously, but I think it's around that. And now I can give you lots of examples where I was a young leader and I was put into positions where things went wrong, and they went wrong big, and that affected me. Now, I think I could have easily have gone deeper down this incident pit by taking various different bad decisions. Mm. And that would have made it steeper. That would have been the easy decision at the time. And that's why you end up getting deeper and deeper down in this incident pit. But again, what were your experiences when you kind of given the club captaincy? Because, you know, no one like, we mentioned it briefly the other day, and I know I speak about this all the time, but no one likes judgment in the negative sense on them. So when you're in a position of leadership, you know, and again, I'm sure you've got a number of different styles which you use, which we might talk about, but, you know, when you first got that position, how did that feel? How prepared were you for it? And did you have any kind of people you lent into to kind of help you with that?
Yes, it was a short boy. He had just joined the club. So he was he was fresh in and he hadn't really done pre-season with us because he was still coaching New Zealand. So, and I'd just come back from a broken arm, so I hadn't played most of the previous season. So I was already a little bit apprehensive. You know, he hasn't seen me play. This set a new boss. You know, I haven't got that money in the bank that you might have. With
skin
with
in the game.
So he called me and he was like, oh, we're going to have a, our chat's going to be a bit longer than everyone else's. And I'm already thinking, what is going on here?
Oh, no.
And he was like, you know, so obviously we both know Dill and he's he was captain at the time. And he said, look, Dill's not sure whether he wanted to carry on the captaincy. It had been a bit turbulent the previous year with the old management. If he doesn't want to, would you know, I'd like you to be captain. I was like, oh, that has gone completely different direction to what I thought.
And on that, because of that, I'm going to sort of scratch at that one. Why, where do you think those positive words came from? Where the other members of the coaching staff, do you think he'd been watching your tapes and preview? Where do you think the recommendations from?
I don't know. I'd like to think that, you know, I've sort of built up a reputation around the club and, and treated everyone fairly and just worked hard and led by example. I'm not the biggest, you know, Churchillian speech or this, that, and the other. You know, that's not really my game. And there's lads in the club that do that. But, you know, I'd like to think that, and maybe Dill had something to do with it as well, because I work quite closely with him. And like you said, being prepared over the years, he had taken me under his wing when I'd first joined, really. And I'd just been sort of like a little... Never had the responsibility, but also or had a little bit of the weight and the leadership without the name tag and the badge as such. It was one that I was, it was a massive honour, mate, for me. And you know, growing up watching the club from when I started playing rugby and this, that, and the other, and obviously being binned off a couple of times on them, and you know, all my teaching, everyone saying, you know, rugby probably isn't for you. You should probably try uni. And
Never listen to your teachers, kids. That's like a common thread in my pods. Never listen to your teachers.
Oh, mate, massive two fingers up to them. But to everyone, that, you know, that is some fuel as well, I think. And I'm not sure where it came from. It was...
And what were they? What were the sort of first? What were the first obstacles that you kind of were faced with that you felt like you were unprepared with, unprepared for with it comes to the leadership? I mean, you're instantly on this pedestal, aren't you, where... You're in the firing line from connection. Again, I work with a few professional players, and you're in the connection between the coaching staff and the players, and kind of you are the go-between, aren't you? And that's a difficult position sometimes because you're getting exposed to information from the coaching staff that you're like, you know, lads aren't going to like this, and you're the man that's got to be the messenger, so to speak, aren't you? So. What kind of obstacles were you met with, and how did you sort of kind of deal with it?
Oh, so the amount of admin, I obviously had no idea that came with it. You know, even from the S&C boys, what flavour water do you want? What flavour juice? This, you know, from that right up to, you know, being pulled into the office, being like X, Y, and Z is, you know, he's caused us in a few issues, or you know, we might have to look at them. There's a difficult decision going to be made. What do you think? This, that, and the other. And then I think that the incident pit, that all culminated as well. And then, like I said, I had a lot of external stresses on, and what I should have done is been gone to boarding and been like, look, mate, I've got a lot on here. Let's just, you know, share the workload. But what I didn't, you know, my first year, first time as captain, I didn't want to, you know, deal with injury as well. So I was the head man at the time.
Yeah,
and I was like, I can't do this. I can't go in and say I've just got to wear it and this and the other. And it shows. It eventually shows. And it was the best thing that's ever happened to me. Long, you know, looking back on it, the best thing that's ever happened to me, in terms of, you know, looking at reassessing everything, this, that, and the other. Because I had, you know, this sounds arrogant, but the years before with a past coaching team, I had credit in the bank. If I played the last coach, I was all, like, I could do no wrong. Even if I had a stinker, he'd still play me. I had that credit. He's all right. Wells all right. Do this. And that was detrimental in the long run because, you know, you eventually it's only small and gradual, but you just knock down a little bit every time, and then external factors and this. And I got binned off, and rightly so. Francois van Wyk, who's the other loose head prop, was playing really well, and I was playing like a pile of poo. So we swapped, but long term, best thing that's happened to me, I think. Really good kick up the arse that I needed.
Now, what I'm hearing there is, you know, that the feedback you got was you actually got some feedback as opposed to just this positive reinforcement all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not a lack of honesty. You got some real feedback. Hey, guess what? You've been dropped. And then you're like, did not see that coming. Now what? And how did you deal with it? And, you know, when that happened, what were the things, again, because this is important to people that are listening in the sense that this is part of your journey, you know, sort of X amount of, appearances later and some lots of success, clearly. It's facing that. That's, you know, again, resilience has got lots of different meaning to people, but that's resilience where you've taken the knock. It would be easy to coast, be easy to kind of collect your paycheck and just kind of be on the fringes. But obviously you haven't done that. So what is the kind of the thoughts that you had and what are the things that you did, the disciplines maybe that you focused on?
Like, to be honest, the first straight away was almost a knee-jerk reaction, like, I need to get this back now.
Yep.
Which is almost detrimental in itself because you start chasing things, doing things out of character, trying to put your hand up and being the X factor. Which, you know, really isn't my position or my game. Like, I'm never going to be the X factor guy. So, you know, you start chasing, doing things out of character, making mistakes, trying to make the big hit where you jump out the line and it makes a massive hole.
You're not
sticking to the system and playing to that game. You almost become a little bit selfish.
Is it fear? A bit of fear there as well? Is that what that is? A bit of fear in the sense
of... Yeah, I think
so,
yeah. Because, you know, your contracts are in such short terms and you want to be playing. And there was also external pressure of like captain seeing this and the other. I'm like, how can I be... You know, you look at Dale, for an example, he's been Northampton's most successful captain.
Yeah.
If he was fit, he'd start this, that and the other. And he dealt with so much external pressure well. And I'm sitting there going, why can't I?
Yeah.
I need to be dealing with this better. I need to be playing better, this, that and the other. It was a struggle, mate, for a couple of months. And then the funny thing was, I accepted it. I just said, look, okay, I'm going to be second choice this year. I'll just do the best I can to be second choice. And then I will fly into, because I played a lot of rugby. I'll get my body right. I won't be playing as much. I won't be as many miles on the clock. And I'll fly into the off season. I'll train throughout. And then I'll fly into the pre-season, have a really good pre-season. And then we'll battle it out from there on. And it's funny, as soon as that, I took that pressure off myself, when you start playing a little bit better.
Yeah.
And there was a couple more starts here, there and the other, everywhere. And it was that feedback, mate, to be honest. It was really helpful. And at the time, it's not what you want to hear, is it? Like, you're playing, you're not going to start again, this, that and the other. You're not playing well enough. This isn't good. This isn't good. And, you know, it was tough because I'd never been there before in my career. It was always, I was a young upcomer, so I was fine being second choice and I was always fighting for that start. Then I got this. So from 23, I'd been first choice up until 28, 29, and then suddenly I'm in this battle where I'm like, okay, I've not been here before. This is new and different to me. But like I said, grown a lot from it and taken a lot from it. And it let me focus on some other things, like my leadership and how to lead from boys. And that was another thing on what I'm going on here a bit, but where I also thought, well, okay, I'm a captain, I've been dropped, but now I need to not mope about, because I need the other lads that aren't in the 23 to see.
That's how you
okay. Wall's not being, you know, he's not, I'm not sure whether I did it or not. The other lads can tell you, but that was on my mindset where I need to lead by example off the pitch here and just work as hard as I can to get back to where I am.
Massively. I think, again, I talk about this a lot with people. People shirk away from accountability. And when you've got accountability, i.e., captaincy, people are watching, and when they're watching and you've got that awareness that they're watching, then you make decisions based on that as well. And that's a good thing if you're prepared to deal with that. A lot of people would go, I'd just rather not do that so I don't have to make the hard decision. And you go, that's fine, you know, but you're just not going to get success if that's there. Those are the decisions that you're making. Whereas what I'm hearing from yourself is you were very conscious, you were being watched when you got dropped, and because, you know, you are one of the leaders of the team, you know, and it's a team, there's always a number of leaders, and you'll have your guys that you connect with.
I've got a great group,
and so that accountability is, and it's crucial, I think, that people search out for that accountability, because it's not just to the other people that they're in the team, but to themselves, because that pressure downward looking at you is actually important to push you upwards, as well as the people, the coaching staff, for them to see that you're making the right decisions. Is that something you recognize? Is that something you've seen in other players as well?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I think, you know, we've not, during my time at Northampton, there's been some players that have come and gone that, you know, you could tell weren't that good for the team, and almost detrimental when they weren't picked, and really damaged the ethos and the ego. Yep. Of the team and the way it operated. But at the moment, there's not really any of those players. Everyone's pretty focused. And I'll tell you what I think it is Chris Boyd, our DOR, is just honest with boys. And whether, you know, like my time, my conversations last year, it wasn't what I wanted to hear, but it was honest, and I knew where I stood. And there is that aspect. He's very honest, and he's very willing to have a difficult conversation, whether it's difficult for him or difficult for the lad. Which I think, you know, in the long run, puts boys in at least they know the position where they stand and where they need to work. And that's, massively, you know, give everyone a goal, and that's where they can at least
100%. Again, because it comes back to me for authenticity. Like, you're so, Boydie is being honest with you, and that's authentic. You can see it. You trust, trust relationship, the key factors to a high performing team. And if he's being honest with you, and it's sometimes it's not what you want to hear, right? It actually sucks, and you go, oh, this is pretty painful to hear. This, and you catastrophize. You go, I'm never going to make it back into the first team ever again. I'll be on the bench the rest of my career, or all these catastrophes that you'll kind of create. They're not real, but you'll create them. But just from all this honest chat, but that's what you needed, because actually that's fuel to, right, get back in the train, back onto the, you know, back on the grind, and get this cracked. It's authenticity that makes these teams work. When people are fed feedback, that is just BS, you know, it's just, it's telling them what they want to hear. It's no good for anybody. And people, again, this is part of resilience, being able to psychologically deal, EQ, good emotional intelligence to deal with, look, this is not what I want to hear, but this is the right thing for me to hear. And again, but goes both ways, relationships with the coaches, staff, and you as a leader, again, speaking to the newer guys at the club, the guys that are coming in, you know, you've got to give them that message too in the right way, right? And again, is that, you don't get trained to do this, do you? That's the problem. No. You don't get trained out to do it. You kind of learn as you go. And I can think of some absolute howling times when I've made some mistakes and maybe given people a bit of a roasting, I was going to say, that's probably not the right word to use, a bit of an ear chewing, when actually I wish I hadn't, because that just wasn't the right, it should be asking questions first, etc. But you learn this as you go. And any kind of experiences yourself when, again, new into the job, and you, because again, I'm the one rattling on now, but I can certainly remember times when people have been put into a position of leadership and they're not quite ready, or they're trying to overfill the position and they're saying and doing stuff that they just wouldn't normally do. It's not authentic. And people see straight through that, like, who's this knob? Do you know what I mean? Just, why is he saying that? Why is he being like that? You know, he's changed, you know, and that's, getting it right isn't easy. As there's going to be people listening in business, corporate, there's going to be other people in sport listening. It's not easy, but how have you managed that, before I kind of go on too much?
It's been a learning curve, but one I've really enjoyed. I think of one actually instance when we're doing a fit, I think it was in pre-season, we're doing a fitness session.
Yeah, man.
And we'd set our stall up pretty early, and I'd spoken to the boys, you know, when we're tired and doing exercises and sprints, there's no rugby at this point, we're just running length up and down the pitch, we don't double over, no hands on knees, stand up straight, because you don't want to show, you know, when I'm playing a game, if I see someone doubled over, it gives me an extra 5-10%. I'm like, look, he is hanging out, I'm fine. So that was the rule, you don't double over, and you know, and the backs are doing, I don't know what backs do, but they're doing something over there, running up and down. I can see three of the backs doubled over, and I fire a shot that way. Yeah. And then the S&C coach goes, "You just worry about you."
Yeah.
And I'm also hanging out. Yeah. So then I'm like, I'm just raging, and I fired back at him, and then I fired back at the three lads. Then, and they weren't like new boys. There's some some lads with a bit of weight around the club, and I both of them fired around.
Yeah.
And it came up, one of them was a young boy actually, and he came up to me and apologised afterwards, and I'm like, and you, like, all the, everything sort of calmed down, and you're like, I really should have just pulled him to one side after the session. Yeah. Look, mate, don't do this. But I was just fuming. And then that coach actually joined at the same time. He was an intern and I was in academy. So we've come up through.
You know each other very well.
So we know each other quite well. It was just like me putting two fingers up. And then, I just read up. And then, afterwards, it's like that thing when we spoke about earlier, when you punch someone on the pitch and get yellows. At the time, it's like, this is the right thing to do. And then afterwards, probably should they approach that in a much different
way. Please, you brought that up, because for everyone listening, that wasn't me on a professional rugby pitch punching someone, getting a yellow in the Heineken Cup. So it's interesting, though, Alex. One of the things I do with groups of people is and individuals is work on their emotional control. Not that I'm the kind of profess to be some saint, but I've learned the hard way, and I've learned the things that work and don't work. And so for those that haven't, so the story, what we're talking about earlier for those listening. So doing my due diligence, doing some good research on Al earlier, before I knew I was speaking to him, and just getting some dirt on him basically. So what do? You Google it, you go on YouTube, and top hit list, shall we say, on Al's YouTube count is getting a yellow card in the Heineken Cup for punching someone. And 80th minute, drawing at the time. I'll let him tell the rest of the story. But talk to us about that.
Not my finest moment by any stretch. I put it down to youth and redheaded. The red mist came down. But a bit of backstory. We're obviously in a tight game up in Glasgow, and I can't even remember who it was now, but I got cheap shotted in a mall, and I thought, right, I'll do something real subtle here and I'll fall on him and cheap shot him back. And it was about as subtle as a slap in the face.
What I'll try and do is I'm going to grab the clip from YouTube and just show how subtle that punch was. Just for pure comedy factor on that one.
Look at that clock entering almost into the last minute. Contact, this is Roberts, out to Lamb. What's the decision here?
Well, what a time.
Got a flag
for the touch judge to intervene.
Ball had gone away.
Yeah.
17 green. Punched.
Yeah.
Blue player on the floor.
Right, are we talking just a penalty?
Yellow card.
Let's come away. Punched a blue player. Recommendation. Yellow card. 17. Yes. Back 10. Wait. Time is off. 17. Yes. Back 10. Wait. Time is off. 9. The mark is here.
Obviously very subtly cheap shot him right in front of the touch judge, and got sent off, yellow carded, but it's more or less sent off then anyway because there's only about 2 minutes left. And they kicked the penalty, won the line out, went the length, scored under the post, won the game, and knocked us out of the Heineken Cup semi final chance, which went down like a lead balloon, mate. And
like
then
fart in a spacesuit.
That's it. Then also we at least get shower and you apologise in the changing rooms, and the lads are all like, ah, it's all right, mate, don't worry, we can tell
to your face that's what they're saying.
And which is fair enough, and and then we're back, at least I've got some beers tonight, I can have a few beers and we'll just let this. And then the flight was cancelled because some fog or mist, so we had to bus it back from Glasgow all the way down to Northampton. So I was, you just sit there refreshing. I don't know why it's so sadistic, refreshing social media, getting called every word under the sun by all the Saints fans that are obviously, rightfully so, fuming that I've made this absolute balls up. But it was an interesting one. But like I say, one that you learn from, and I haven't been yellow carded yet this season, and I'm likely not to play the rest of it. So that's the first.
clean sheet this season, I think, by the sounds of it. So just on that then, so I think there's a few things that I want to dig into, if you don't mind, just on that. So again, it's that high-performing team, high expectations. You've got the fan aspect, which I guess I've never really got any experience of. But I have got experience of working with other people that have those kind of experiences where what the fans say on Twitter and what the general feeling has an impact on you and your mood, because you're, however you skin it, again, please don't take offense to this, that you're an entertainer for the spectators, aren't you, really? They're the ones paying the tickets. They're the ones spending the money, and they're paying your wages ultimately. And to let them down is not a good feeling, I'm sure. And so it's interesting to hear you honestly say, you know, refreshing your feed, looking at the comments, and that weighing on you heavily, you know, and genuinely, you know, what is going through your head with all that, and what are you projecting forward and thinking about?
It's a difficult one. I got told very early on, I can't remember who told me this now, but you've got to have a short memory in this game. And I would do well. Yeah. I've developed a very short one, mate. I can barely remember where my keys are. Yeah. So we, you know, 1 week you can be that, you know, the villain, and then the next week everyone will have forgotten about it when you score a try and the game to score the winning try for a game. So it's very fickle in that aspect. Where, you know, you can be 0 1 minute, hero the next, and then the next week you could be forgotten about. So it's quite humbling that aspect. So I try not to take too much seriously, especially externally, from people that are outside the inner circle. Obviously, like you say, you respect it and you can understand it. And being, you know, I was a fan first before I played, so yeah, I can understand the frustration. But like, yeah. You know, the opinions who I really care for are that. Of my teammates who go out there and, you know, I've let down in that aspect. So it's a difficult one to manage, but just approaching it and, like I said, short memory. You've got to park it and move on.
Did you have a process within the club to talk about that and to kind of, for you to kind of have ownership of that mistake? I mean, obviously the result isn't your fault. You will naturally probably blame yourself in a number of ways, but you were drawing. What happened after that wasn't your fault. Everybody, you know, there was a number of errors, I'm sure. But, you know, as a club and as a team, did you have a process for that? You must have got a fair amount of stick.
Straight after the game, I did. Well, yeah. I got in the change room, apologised straight away in the change room. Got a telling off from the DOR. It wasn't Bordy that time. It was Jim Mallander, our previous DOR, and then got a little bit of a earful from our forwards coach as well. And then Monday, to be fair, it was a bit of a, you know, why did you do that?
Yeah.
It was a bit, everything calmed down a little bit. You know, it wasn't the end of the world. It was frustrating, but we were still alive in the Premiership and we're doing really well and we got to the final that year. And it was calmed down a little bit. And again, held my hand up, said sorry. And I was only young at that point. I must, you know, I was almost trying to make my mark and impress. Like, I've got a bit of, an edge, and I can, you know, yeah, I can mix it with the big boys. I don't mind throwing it about, and then you throw it about, and then you get put right back at the bottom. You're like,
And you can, you know what, as a fan, you can watch this stuff. I've got my own experiences in my background, but you can watch this as a fan, and you can go, why are they making these same mistakes? Not the time you need it, but the point is you can't learn this stuff before you've had the experiences of it, right? You learn it. It's powerful when you do it yourself and you make that mistake and you go, right, that is hopefully never going to happen again. Yeah. Right. And it's not all bad. I don't want to kind of dwell on that too much, because I'd rather take you back to kind of the other end of that spectrum. So Heineken Cup final and 79th minute, and then it going the other way. You know, that there's got to be lows and highs in your careers. And coming off the bench to score the winning try in the Premiership final? Sorry,
Premiership final.
Let's talk about that. I mean, again, one end of the spectrum to the other with a game.
Oh, that was another interesting one to approach, because that selection meeting was difficult, because I'd played the whole season starting, been the number one, because the Alex Corbizera, who was the loose head, who was came in at the number one, had been injured all season. So I'd played every game and started every game, you get called into the meeting, and just before you walk in, the forwards coach grabs you, he's like, Al, come here. And I'm like, oh, no, what's coming here?
Yeah,
and he's like, right, you know, I'm starting now. I'm starting Corbs. You're going to be on the bench, and you come off. I mean, look, it worked out all right in the end.
Yeah.
And everything happens, and that was another learning experience. But a great day, mate. And it was just, to be honest, we'd run out of time, but I wasn't aware we'd run out of time. So I thought, I'll give this a crack, and then if I if I pull up short, we can have another go. But I didn't know we couldn't have done. It managed to pay off in the end. I just took the chance. It paid off. But
can you remember? Because again, having done my, I don't remember watching the game, but having done my research, there was a big old pause from your try score to, again, how did you? I talk about stressing the gaps. You know, when you've got the ball, you're sort of pushing through and you drop down. Did you not get over the try line? That's, you're in your flow. It's not a stressful event for you.
Yeah.
Then you've got this gap, this pause, this wait until the decision's made. You know, what kind of things were going through your brain then?
I hope the camera's seen it.
I knew I'd
touched the line with the ball, but there's so many bodies about, and all it takes is someone's knee to be somewhere or leg to be somewhere, and it's just game over. And so, you know, I got up, the lads celebrated, got up, and obviously they go upstairs to the TMO, and you know, I've got lads going, "Did you get it?" I'm like, yeah, I got it. And then, you know, it's a longer and longer, and you're no way. And then it was strange because before JP awarded the try, everyone has these like ref links in now, so they can hear what the TMO is saying to the ref.
Nice.
So before the ref's awarded it, you know, you hear the crowd cheer because he's gone, you know, "JP, you can award the try." So a whole crowd cheer, and I'm like, "Is that Sarri's cheering, or is that Northampton?"
Yeah, yeah.
And then he puts his hand up, and I'm like, "Thank God for that, because I'd have been in a world of pain if that hadn't been
mega
thinking about it."
It's incredibly tough to give, but I think it's a try.
You may award the try.
The Kings of England. Warner is the hero. Nearly 30 years of waiting is over.
It's been an amazing game. So many unbelievable performances, but for me,
it could have gone either way, let's be fair. Fantastic season.
Stay in rugby for a little bit. I'm just going to try and push it out in a minute, but regards to players, as you sort of spoke about in your early days, you wasn't like this dream of yours to be this rugby player your whole life. But as you've come into it and as you've played the game and seriously invested in the game, who are the players that you've kind of used as your maybe role models? Maybe they're in the club, maybe they're not, maybe they're external, maybe they're massive international stars. Yeah. I don't know. But who are those guys that you kind of look up to as the, you know?
I was quite fortunate, because when I came into the squad, it was quite a mature squad, and I was the only young boy.
Yeah.
So I just latched into some quite senior players, you know, like your Dylan Hartleys, and then there's a fair few others that were around, like Neil Best, Roger Wilson. These are all names of pretty
massive,
high up there rugby players at the time, and most of them are retired now, which is a scary thing. You know, my mates are retiring, but you know, I think. And I've said this to Dale, so I'll say it on here, but he was a massive influence in my career. And he just gave me a little bit of weight. I don't know if he saw a little bit of himself, like the little fat kid in him, another little fat kid, and thought, you know, I'll give him a shot. And he gave me a lot of weight and confidence within the squad. So,
And how, you know, for other people, I'm trying to connect this to people listening. Yeah. Everyone's not got a Dylan Hartley team, but how important to you, influential for you, was that sort of be taken under the wing by that kind of person? In some ways would have taken humility from you to go, I can learn from this person. Obviously, we know you could as a younger person going into that squad, but equally, there's some people that would go, I'm talented, I don't need the help of anybody. So how influential was that?
Oh, it's massive. And just on that, that was the approach I had. I should have mentioned this earlier, but so with the way the changing rooms work in the club is at one end of the changing room is the first team changing room or senior changing room. It's got windows for a start. You know, you've got your own locker. It's very nice and plush. And then in the bottom end of this long corridor is another changing room, is the academy changing room.
Yeah.
No windows, no natural light, no lockers, just hanging gear up on pegs. This and the proper rugby club. And I was in that changing room, obviously, and I was just like, I don't want to be here. I want to be in that one. Yeah, and the academy I was with at the time were quite cliquey, real niche. Just wanted to hang around with each other. And I was like, I don't want to be here. I want to be in that changing room. So I just, you know, it sounded a little, you know, lads would, you know, oh, you're brown nosed and this, that, and the other. I'm like, no, I'm not. I just don't want to be here. Like, I don't know why you lads want to be here, because it's absolutely crap in this room. So I'm just going to go hang around with those boys.
Yeah.
I don't want to hang around with you. So that's where I want to be. I'll go hang around with them.
That is you kind of creating little goals for yourself, isn't it? In the sense of little targets. You know, people, you know, I'm sure somewhere there was other bigger goals that you had within your sort of career, but that was the first step, isn't it? It's like, well, I'm doing well, I'm in an academy for a top club. That is a good place to be. I've been to plenty of sports clubs that have got that, and as a grey-haired, grey-beard old guy, to try and speak to lads in the academy, say, you've got a massive, amazing opportunity. They don't always recognise it, do they, right?
No.
They don't recognise the opportunity they've got, always. But it is a massive opportunity. You are one or two steps away from having a dream career in many ways. Of playing sport, you know, for a living. And you know, for me, I would have loved to have done that. I was never good enough at any sport, really, but I've loved sport, always had, and to be able to play that competitively, I do it in my spare time now because it's still what I love to do. So you know, that's a mini little goal for you. I can relate to myself. You know, when I was in the Marines, again, arguably before I got in the Marines, but when I was in the Marines, there was this recce troop. I didn't really hear much about what they did, but they always got the better kit, went to better places. They never stayed with the rest. And that appealed to me, right? So I was like, obviously I wanted to be SF long-term, didn't think I was ever good enough, but recce troop was that first step. Yeah. Got into recce troop, spent a bit of time in there, got a bit of extra confidence. Then it was like, saw a few of them lads go off onto selection. Some were successful, some weren't, you know, picked the kind of nuggets of information from each of the people that I could, that was valuable to me, and then made that flight myself. And again, hopefully during my career, look back and help with people coming my sort of journey as well. But it's that setting themselves those little targets, those little goals. It's not always conscious, but when you were describing that, you was in the academy and there's a bit of clickiness, there's some talent in there, some great blokes, I'm sure, people that could have made it massive, and that probably didn't because they weren't humble enough to go, there's lots of people in that other change room that can help me, and I'm just going to go and ask them. People love to help, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There were some definitely good players. You know, the downfall, I think, for them is they didn't buy into the ethos at the time of that group. Like that group at the time, there were some senior players, but they were very much about the team. There wasn't, you know, there's a lot of single guys, no family guys, really. It was all about play the game and then you go out and everyone, but what these boys would do, and you know, it was a risk on my part because it could have gone either way.
Because
we'd have a game on a Monday for the development team, but the Saturday night I'd get a text like, oh, do you fancy a beer? I'm like, well, yeah, because I don't want to be playing development. I don't want to be playing this. I want to be playing first team. I'm going to go. And that was a risk that, you know, could have impacted my performance on a Monday or this, that and the other. But I thought, oh, if I just associate myself for the whole time with those boys, I want to be seen as one of those boys, not as the academy. And that, you know, I'm sure that's transferable throughout
massively
for businesses,
absolutely,
and whatnot. But
you're exactly right. It's about, you know, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. That's what they say, isn't it? If you're the best person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And so, because that, it comes back to, we mentioned it earlier, I think, in part about accountability, in the sense that when you're in a group of people that are all very, very good, you've got to keep on top of your game. Otherwise, you're letting them down. They're looking down on you thinking, who's this bloke trying to sort of reach our level? You know, it's like you've got to strive to be there. And, it, you know, accountability for yourself, but to a punchy, high-performing team is useful stuff. So I think there's loads of crossover there. So with regards, like moving on a little bit, I'm trying to jog through this a little bit. With regards to the key things that you think that have given you your success, I kind of posed a few questions before we came on, but like I don't want to kind of put you on the spot with this one. But the kind of, what do you think are the things that kind of you've needed the most of to get you your success and continued success?
Mate, I think for me, especially in my position, it's different throughout rugby as a whole, and I won't keep it specific to rugby, but I think just the hard work. I think people, especially for my job, people romanticise this pro sportsman life, you know, do you see all this stuff, the flashy cars and that and the other. I've got none of that. But yeah, what I do have is I do a job that I love for a living. And it supports me and my family, which is great, but you just got to work at it. If you want it, like I said earlier, eggs all in one basket, all in, commit to that. And I think that's what stood me in good stead so far to get to where I am now, is just hard work. I enjoy it. I love my job. I enjoy going to work every day. I enjoy being around with the lads, and I enjoy having a good crack. But when it's time to work, we work, and then straight away afterwards we'll go have a good crack.
And what I'm trying to, so I agree with you. There's very, like, success comes down to two words: hard work. In many ways. But
yeah,
what, like, for other people listening, like, I'm trying to give them context to what hard work means for you. So, like, hard work to me means one thing. And I was having a chat with someone, former commanding officer, actually, of the unit. And we were talking about kind of average within our organization. Now, average within my old organization is a pretty blinkered view of average in certain disciplines, right? And so if you, in your sort of high-performing team, your view of hard work is probably pretty blinkered, because you're not seeing what Sally or Susan down the road does for what she classes as hard work. You know what I mean? And so, you know, when, what's the kind of, how can you give people perspective, really, to what you mean by graft or hard work? What's that kind of mean to you?
Well, for me, mate, I think you have our day is set out very much like you'd imagine. You get your school program, like, you've got your lessons here, there, and your timetable. Everything is literally put on a plate for you. It's brilliant. But for me, it's fitting stuff in that everyone isn't doing. So everyone does all that.
Yeah.
For me, the hard work is, can I get in and do a watt bike at 7 before all the lads come in? Or even to the point, you know, can I get that in, then do my physio, get everything ready so I'm ready for the day, and then I'm starting the day that everyone else is doing. And, you know, it's a discipline. I'm not saying I'm perfect, because some days it's just not right and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do that today, but I try as much as I can to do it. And it's just, I quite enjoy it, because there's a young prop who plays my position. He's got a lot of talent. He's going to be a star. I think he's I won't say his name, because he'll end up taking my contract. He'd be embarrassed to listen to this back in 5 years. But
yeah, won't age very well.
But he's going to be a star, and he's got a lot of, he's very, very humble, and he's not one of these young boys who come in and you're seeing it more and more. He's on Snapchat and Instagram and all this, and posing and that. Yeah, he does a little bit, but I'm trying to beat it out of him. But I text him every morning. If I'm in doing a fitness session, I'll go on my WhatsApp and I'll see that he's not up yet. Like last seen at 11 o'clock or something.
I'll
just send him a picture of like a pool of sweat, and I'm like, well, you're sleeping. I'm training.
Yeah, love it, mate.
Just taking the piss. I'm just joking around. I just want to, and I'll start to the point where he'll start to come in with me, I reckon, and we'll do some sessions together. But
I love that.
I'm only doing that because I got it done to me as well. So
Well, that's it. That's leadership, though. That is leadership in a nutshell. You create this kind of ripple effect in your career. Like, what's happened to you? Again, I can only relate to my stories. I had some brilliant, brilliant leaders that I like to think each one of them I took as much from as I could. Now, I had some bad ones as well, and there's some things that they did. I went, that is absolutely not what I want to do, and probably sometimes still did it. But what I remember, memory is a great thing like this. It creates false memories. But my memory is that I took good things from all my best ones and tried to park all the bad stuff. But that kind of stuff is powerful. When someone's done it to you, right? And it's well-natured, because you are poking fun. But are you motivating him? Absolutely. Are you teaching him good lessons? Absolutely. And him aligning himself to people like you, you know, you taking him under his wing. It's good for both of you, right? Because, you know, it is, because you do want him to have your career, you know.
Absolutely,
you know, you want him to follow in your footsteps and have the successes. And so that's awesome. I do love that. That is massive camaraderie. And again, I don't know if people will have those experiences in their life if they've not been working in an environment where you've got honesty and you've got authenticity, where people genuinely are about trying to bring everyone up. I love that. I can relate to that in lots of ways. It wasn't always me, but I've certainly had those kind of experiences myself. And so, yeah, I'm aware you're nursing an injury at the minute, Al. You know, and we're sort of, we're halfway through the season, not quite.
Just about halfway there.
How's that going? And for the people that are following your career, sort of, what's the news on that, if you don't mind sharing it, if it's not top secret?
Right, actually. Yeah, no, I was just training. It was so innocuous. Just training. We're doing some scrum practice. Did one scrum, and I thought, someone's just kicked me in the back of the heel here. That's a bit niggly. I thought, that's sore. That hurts a bit. So it didn't, in all honesty, I'm not trying to play the hard man. It didn't really hurt. It just felt like someone kicked me in the back of the leg, and I'm like, phew. And I tried, you know, physio came over and I was like, no, I'm all right, mate. I just got kicked. And he was like, no, just sit there a minute because something's not right. And my Achilles had completely snapped in half.
Oh, man.
And then, so yeah, I had surgery 5.5-6 weeks ago. Now it's going all right, mate. I'm ahead of schedule, out the boot. It's healing well, doing some bits and bobs, getting back on the bike now. I just did one before this, a little watt bike. And then, you know, I said this to you earlier when we were having a chat before, but it is probably the best time for me to have an injury is when the whole season stopped and the whole country stopped on lockdown for me to, you know, not for me to, whilst I'm off and everyone's sort of twiddling their thumbs. I've got rehab and all sorts of video calls with physios and this, that, and the other.
What are you WhatsApping the young prop right now?
I haven't WhatsApped him actually. Yeah, I need to, He did post something the other day that made me cringe a little bit, so I'll find some abuse his way at some point.
That's awesome. How are you finding lockdown? What's the Waller household like right now?
It's pretty chill, mate, to be honest. Yeah. The weather's been good, isn't it? So that's been helping, and Glitlin can get out in the garden and run himself tired. But I run a small furniture company with one of the other lads,
Tom Wood.
We build custom furniture, so I've just, obviously we've both got our workshops at our houses, so we haven't been breaking social distancing rules, but we've both been flat out in the workshop, and it's the most time I've ever spent in there, and I'm enjoying it, and I've got a million and one jobs to do in the house as well. The list keeps growing and not a lot keeps getting done because I'm just making furniture for everyone else.
Is this a passion, or is this part of your kind of future plans, just a hobby? What's this?
It's my unwinding, I think. It's a strange one because I sort of fell into it. We bought a house 5 or 6 years ago.
You and Tom Wood?
That'd be the weirdest house in the world. Me and my missus bought a house, and it had just that the previous bloke was he was a custom furniture builder, and he had this purpose-built workshop in the back garden. It's just a big shed essentially, but he'd just get out with all the power and stuff. And I was like, I'll just have a little tinker in here. He left a few tools and that, and I was like, just tinkering it, just snowballed into this.
Yeah, it's absolutely
another beast. And now I was saying. We moved house, and the joke was I was just searching for a workshop with an annex.
For the missus and baby.
I love it, and it's quite rewarding. In you've got a physical thing, start with X, end with Y. At the end of the day, it's almost like, oh, I've made something here physically. There it is, and I've just focused on that. Everything else is sort of a whack a podcast in. And I'll just crack on and make.
I love it. So again. For people listening, really, I was, and again, I don't know if I've spoke about this before, probably not, but I often talk about, so again, people in that are pushing themselves in a number of areas of their life, work, home, you know, young family is hard work and it pushes you as a person. Anyone struggling at home with young children, then join the club. It is hard. It's a hard graft. And so most people put most of their life into work and family, rightly so. Having something like what you've described, I use the term third space. It's heard mentioned as a couple of things in psychology, but that third space to let off some steam, maybe, you know, people like do phys for people that haven't got a particularly physical job. people like to make music, people like to paint, all these things. But having this third space where you can have your time, your extra separate thing. And I'm sure, I don't want details, if anything's ever a bit stressful in any of those environments, whether it's work or whether it's home, it's a place to retreat to and kind of get stuck into that, you know, and it's mega useful. And again, it's people often, when they're burnt out, it's often because they haven't got this outlet for this kind of stress of work and life. Because if any one of those is becoming difficult, then you can often find a few kind of cogs of the machine sort of whistling off, and you've got no way of repairing that. So it's awesome to hear. Do you get, again, just kind of thinking, I don't want to sort of be talking about the end of your career, far from it, but, you know, do you get much help at Saints with that kind of planning, with that thought? Is this something that the older guys, people like Dylan, maybe have chatted to the younger guard about?
Not so much from the players. It's actually club-led, and also we've got like a players union called the RPA who are massive in trying to prepare boys for post rugby. I think it's massive important, because we're not earning footballer money where you can always set yourself up for life, and you know, but we're earning good enough money where you can set yourself up if you want to do education or start a business, or you know, you find a lot of boys have little entrepreneurial interests and you know, they've got their fingers in a few pies. They're the ones that are switched on anyway. And it breaks you when you see the young lads, because at that point in their career, when they're 18, you know, it can still go either way. You're in the door, but you're by no means, you know, as you've probably seen in the academies you visit, you're in no means secure in your career.
Yeah.
And you never are. And that's the honest truth about it. But you have a little bit more weight the further you get. But when no one knows who you are and knows that it's massively important, you've got to focus on that education. Or, like I say, education wasn't for me, so I like to do stuff and make things, so I'd sort of gone down that path. And but it's a massive push from the club and external. And some of the boys will speak and get behind the lads, and I'll push it with the young boys. But you're just in there. So you're in there from 7 till 4, and you're just more or less so focused on the job at hand and trying to remember not to bugger up a line out call or something.
I like it. I love hearing about it, because again, you're not the first sportsman to sort of to talk about that to me. But I think as a veteran, military veteran, it makes me smile, because there isn't the same focus on what you do next. There's very little education. You get 12 months at the end where you start to, or you get some enhanced learning credits, these kind of lumps of money to do extra stuff. It's easy to not do the extra stuff that you have to do, because you're very, very busy, and that's the extra thing, you know, that forward planning when you're so focused on work. It's kind of a bind for a lot of people. I know I didn't do a good job of that, and did an awful job of spending that money, transitioning, etc. And you're so, I guess the words, loyal to the organization, that when you're leaving, you're still focusing on the organization right up until the point where you know you're leaving in a few days, weeks, whatever, because you don't want to be viewed as being selfish. Exactly. And and it is quite different in the middle. I know there's going to be some of that with sport as well, and I just know there's going to be people listening, veteran side, going, you know, man, I wish we had an organization pushing that. There absolutely isn't. There's an organization that tries to make some coin from us, but not really for our well-being, thinking genuinely for our betterment. But now it's good to hear. I'll try and wrap this up, Al. Obviously, injury aside, what's your thoughts on, do you think you're going to play another game of rugby this season, or?
I think so. The last I heard was, we're going to start training in small groups in the next couple of weeks, if the government allow it, and then we'll build towards. I think the plan for the Premiership is to play behind closed doors around the end of June, July time, if everyone is fit and healthy and not transferring any virus within the squad. But I don't think we'll be playing in front of crowds for a while.
How do you envisage that going?
Yeah, it's a weird one, mate.
Yeah.
When you play, and I've played in some games where there is hardly any crowd, and when there's, I played in front of 80,000 people, you know, you've played this different, but you're so focused on the task at hand, it almost yeah, everyone's like, oh, does the noise make a difference? Like, all my mates and stuff when I first started. Yeah, well, I didn't really hear it. It just becomes this blur of white noise because I'm so focused on the task in hand and talking to
absolutely
the boys left and right of me that you don't really hear it. But I think it's going to be a weird one with no atmosphere because you'll just hear... You'll hear all the terrible chat that goes on the pitch, and which will be interesting if there's they'll obviously all be televised to make up for the. So you'll hear some, you know, heinous chat that goes on the pitch that gets missed usually because the rest have all got mics on now, so you'll be able to pick everything up clear as day. And there won't be that atmosphere as well, so it'll take some getting used to. But I think the boys want to. Once you're 5 minutes into a game, you're just focused on doing your job anyway because you're hanging out, and you're trying to survive for 40 minutes until you get a break.
And how if you manage to get started again this season, what's the goal for the club? Do you think winners?
Oh, we want to be in the mix with some silverware. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We had a great season. We've had a couple of probably actually towards. The end where coronavirus hit and we all stopped, we're just having a little dip, but you get them in the season, you get a little dip every now and again, and it's just managing that and trying not to be overwhelmed by the external pressures and, you know, the board of directors or this, that and the other, or X, Y and Z saying, why aren't you winning? You know, we need to, and that's not something I deal with. You know, Chris probably takes that all on the chin, but we just need to be just refocus. It's probably been a good thing for us. Let the boys' bodies recover a little bit. I know the lads have all been training pretty hard with us, you know. But we're going to have some time getting back to the season to get boys right again. Obviously, that's I won't be playing, but but I think silverware is definitely in the target for this season, whether it be in Europe or in the Premiership. I think Europe's probably done, by the way. This is all turning out to be, but at least the Premiership's probably still alive.
Yeah, no, good. I hope so, because it'd be a shame for yourselves, fans, everyone to kind of just to end where it is. But there is next year. I hope the injury recovery goes well, mate. I wish you well with that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And again, just from me, it's fascinating for me. I said to you at the start, maybe off camera, I can't remember, about I genuinely enjoy this. I enjoy talking to people like yourself. So I appreciate your time, and I know people will be listening. And they'll have got some nuggets. I get feedback on every single pod and people say, hey, there's some awesome stuff that's really helped me this, helped me that. Any of that happens, I'll feed straight over to you. But just understand that there is people listening, sort of really appreciative. And some people just need that kick up the horse to put that hard work in to go after whatever it is they want to do. So hearing it from the horse's mouth of someone that's done it and just can graft, then it's not complicated. People are always looking for that secret sauce. But it seems to me the common thread is, there is no secret sauce, right?
No, it's hard work, mate. Mate, I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on. It's been it's an honour. Thanks very much.
Not really at all. No, really good. Thanks, Alex.
Cheers, good. Thanks, mate. Bye, mate.